last and final case is State v. Sidney. State v. Sidney.
May it please the court. My name is Matt Kosmicki. I represent the appellant in this case, Jamar Sidney. It's appeal from the Lancaster County District Court, where he's convicted after trial of possession of a firearm by a prohibited person and sentenced to 10 to 15 years imprisonment. Mr. Sidney has assigned 6 errors on appeal. It was error for the district court to deny his motion for new trial, four or five instances of ineffective assistance of counsel, and then that the sentence was excessive. The first issue I lead off with is the motion for new trial. At Sidney's trial, his theory of defense was identification was mistaken. And Matthews, one of the witnesses that was at the trunk where this gun was at, where this shot was fired, was probably the state's key witness. There was officers, obviously, that said they saw this, but they're at a disadvantage because they're coming into the parking garage and the angle of the ramp. But Matthews was right there by the trunk, and she's placed this gun in Mr. Sidney's hands. But after the trial, trial counsel, which wasn't me, was made aware of some Facebook messages from an acquaintance that had somehow access to Ms. Matthews' Facebook page, where Ms. Matthews was in a relationship. I'm getting ahead of myself. Prior to this, 3 times Ms. Matthews denied she was in a relationship with one of the other men at the end of the car, Mr. Jones. She denied it to the police. She denied it in a deposition about a month before trial. And she denied at trial that she was in a relationship with Jones.
But she had admitted she had previously been, right?
She had previously been, right. But at the time she was there, she wasn't, right? And so what these messages, I think these Facebook messages and these images and whatever you want to call them, I don't know the right term for them, but show that she's been with him the whole time. And she was actually pregnant with this child. So she effectively lied about her relationship continuing. I get what you're saying. I think she said at trial or one of them, maybe for a couple months in December, they were in a relationship or something like that, but it was over, right? I know at the time of trial she said it was over, but these messages, I think, that trial counsel was given later after he was convicted demonstrate that she still was in a relationship with him.
Was there evidence that she was in a relationship with him at the time she testified to the fact that she was not in one?
Well, that's the record's kind of hard on that because I poured through those images. They don't have a date stamp on them. I don't know who trial counsel got that from to say, when they were. I don't know if you can tell. But the implication that he argued at the motion for new trial is that she lied about it. You know what I mean? I think she says that we're in this brief relationship. I think, well, if you're with someone and there's multiple pictures and then she's pregnant with this child, I think it's a little bit more than that.
So does the evidence or the affidavit, whatever was introduced at the motion for new trial, have any indication of whether she was pregnant or knew she was pregnant at the time of trial?
I don't believe it says anything like that at all. No. But I'm on the appellate counsel, that she was in this relationship, effectively lied about it, or she should have said something. I mean, she was cross-examined pretty hard, and it was, both parties did that. And,
for there to be error here, though, this is a motion for new trial.
Right.
Right? The burdens on you are, right?
Right.
And as it relates to saying that this new evidence, that number one, it's new, and then it wasn't discovered or discoverable, right? That's the burden here.
Right.
She admitted to a relationship, whether she was currently in it or not. What's the new evidence that wasn't discoverable? That she was pregnant? How was that not discoverable if that they just didn't probe into that deep enough, right?
Well, I don't know how they could have probed it more. I mean, they asked her, right, in the depositions, and I wasn't there at the trials, and the record doesn't show, did she show up at the trial pregnant? I don't know. We don't know that. But I would assume that if she was, the trial counsel, somebody would have said, I see you're pregnant, who's the father, right? But I think she was drilled multiple times, at least in the deposition and at trial, are you in a relationship? And she made it sound like there wasn't really anything going on. Meanwhile, we know that there was. I mean, there's multiple pictures of daddies coming you know, daddy's here, something like that, or baby Carter's happy when daddy's here, that kind of thing. And the sentencing was just a couple months after the trial, right? So, I mean, the implication from those messages, I think, or we are arguing, is that she was still in the relationship at the time of the trial.
Okay, so as it relates to that new evidence, the suggestion here is, hey, if that was known, you know, she testified at trial.
Right.
But she testified that that Mr. Sidney had the gun, but she also testified that her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend or whatever had the gun.
Right.
Right? So where's the prejudice in this? You have two officers that established that Mr. Sidney had the gun. She acknowledged that he had the gun. Like,
well, I think there's, but the problem with that, I think there's prejudice because she was really in this relationship, and the reason is she testified the way she did and put the gun in Mr. Sidney's hand because that was to protect her boyfriend that she was still in a relationship with. She may have been in early stages of pregnancy, I don't know, but that was, you know what I mean? That I think that's the prejudice. The other options, I get that hey, that's what the county court or the district court said was, these, you know, these other witnesses saw this. But at the same time, those witnesses had issues too, right? And I mean,
Mr. Sidney was the only one wearing a red shirt, right?
Right.
That night. And everybody said that the person holding the guns wearing a red shirt. Like,
well, Sullivan was off. Sullivan said that the color of the shirt was orange and the shirt was red. Sullivan said that I was off to the side and I could see past Moore up the ramp. When the video evidence is that Sullivan's behind Moore, when had to see through Moore and everything else. Moore's saying, you know, I'm coming up the ramp. There's the Giglio issue out there. I think there's all these witnesses at some point had credibility issues. And then there's the defense's witnesses on the other side. Mr. Welch gets up there and says, hey, I came around the corner. Jones was the one that pulled out the gun, pointed it at me. I hit the deck, and the shot rang out. The last person I saw holding the gun was Jones, right? So, I mean, there's all these things. But, and I get it that she says, Moore or Jones picked up the gun, put it back into the trunk. Sidney picks it up, shoots it, and then throws it back in the trunk.
So she's protecting him from firing the gun. But that's not the issue. It's not who fired it. It's if you're in possession, you're in possession, correct?
Right. But in her mind, she's protecting her boyfriend from shooting the gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
But and so not by putting it in Jones's hand, you know, she protects her boyfriend, not realizing it puts him in there, right? And puts Mr. Sidney into trouble. So I believe there's prejudice because she puts it there and she's, at the time, she had lied about their relationship. And Mr. Sidney, I'm going to get these guys turned around all the time. Mr. Sidney never gets to present that evidence that she was still in a relationship. And that's why she would make this up, is to protect her boyfriend, the father of her child. That's our prejudice.
Wait, so are you saying there is insufficient evidence to prove that Mr. Sidney had touched the gun at all?
Right.
Not that he didn't fire it, but
right.
Even that he held it at any point.
Right. And that's his argument, is there was insufficient evidence. And being able to present this evidence of the relationship that we believe existed at the time between Matthews and Moore, the other person at the end of the car where this gun was fired, bolstered that evidence, right? If we've been able to present that she was in that relationship, that would have shown that prejudice,
I guess.
Demonstrated that, okay?
Thank you. I understand what you're
in
saying.
In other words, it would have called her credibility into question further.
Quite a bit, I think. Exactly, yeah. I'm in my rebuttal time. I'll sit down for now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back, Mr. Lewis.
Your dreams are your ticket out. Welcome back, Carter, for you young people. Good afternoon. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is Mr. Sidney's direct appeal of his conviction of possession of a firearm by a prohibited person. It's a Class 1D felony under Nebraska Revised Statute 28-1206. Getting into the new trial issue, Mr. Sidney claims that a new trial was warranted because of the evidence he claims was newly discovered and necessitated it, that evidence being social media posts confirming that Matthews was in a relationship, in some sort of relationship, and having a child. with Mr. Jones, the other person, one of the other people that was present that night, who he claims that Matthews is trying to protect by blaming him for the shooting. State versus Brown, the Nebraska Supreme Court said that first, a defendant must show that the evidence at issue has been newly discovered since trial, meaning that the evidence could not with reasonable diligence have been discovered and produced at trial. Second, they must show that the evidence is so substantial that without it, a different verdict would probably have been reached at trial had it been included. Brown makes clear that the evidence must have existed at trial for it to be uncovered at the trial as newly discovered. On that first prong, as opposing counsel mentioned, some of the social media posts don't seem to have any dates associated with them whatsoever. So just as a preliminary matter, the state would say that if you could prove what dates the social media post came from, anything after trial would be, you know, irrelevant as far as we're concerned. But then also the stuff that you could prove that would be part of the trial sort of era would be it would have been discoverable, and it would have been able to have been discovered prior to that that hearing on the new trial motion that was filed. And also, there was no evidence that was submitted that the state withheld evidence at any point. There was nothing that seemed to suggest that this was through some sort of sleight of hand. It just seems like, you know, some of these social media posts were either not looked into, not investigated, not discovered until after the fact, either by the fact that they were created afterwards or during. That material was pulled directly from Matthew's social media accounts, which would seem to suggest that reasonable diligence would have been able to discover it. On that second prong, one of the things I want to highlight is that, and this is something that was talked about earlier, Matthew's not the only witness that saw the rifle in Sidney's hands that night. We have two Lincoln police officers that saw Sidney with a rifle. And just to be clear and as explicit as I can be, we're talking about an AK-47 semi-automatic assault weapon, 7.62 millimeter. I mean, we're talking about a big gun. I think the police officers testified that it was over 2.5 feet long. And you've got officers coming up the ramp, you know, a couple hundred feet, 100 feet, 150 feet from where Mr. Sidney is standing, where this group of people is standing. The video shows the officers coming up the ramp. They're not right behind each other. I mean, they're behind each other, but, you know, you have the officer in behind, following several feet behind. I would think that it would be fairly easy to see a rifle of that size in someone's hands unless you were immediately, I'm talking like right off that guy's back. Both the officers tested repetitively about Sidney's actions, clothes, appearance, actions, and placement that night, as well as the clothes, actions, and appearances of the other people that are present that night. There was the issue, the discrepancy in the color of the shirt. As somebody that is partially red colorblind, I can relate. Orange, red, it is very distinguishable from the other clothes that the other people were wearing that night. The jury was specifically instructed on weighing the credibility of Matthew's testimony. Her relationship status was discussed several times at trial, essentially casting doubt on her credibility. The state doesn't think that it could be said that even if the testimony that she provided was determined to be completely incredible by the finder of fact, a substantially different result would have been the only remaining result based on the fact that the officers testified the way that they did. And then also that testimony sort of triangulated with the surveillance footage that's there, the other testimony from other officers that remembered, you know, sort of the events of the night, the positioning of those two witnessing officers, etc. If there are no further questions on the new trial aspect, I'll move on to the ineffective assistance of counsel claims. The record may not be sufficient to address all of these claims, but the state offers in the alternative that Mr. Sidney has not really specifically described what was so unreasonable about the trial strategy and tactics engaged by his trial counsel. There are some examples provided, but it's mostly just the subsequent examples of ineffective assistance of counsel that are provided. Otherwise, it's largely a blanket assertion that his trial counsel did not communicate with him to his liking based on his other ineffective assistance of counsel claims. And the legal standard is that trial counsel is afforded due deference to formulate trial strategy and tactics. Next, the alleged failure to depose witnesses, specifically Officers Moore and Sullivan, and then also Mr. Jones, who is Matthew's now boyfriend and father of their child. Trial counsel for Sidney went to great effort to flesh out how the rifle was being held and by whom during the testimony of the officers and Matthews. The positioning of the officers, the positioning of the group near the Kia in the parking garage, the distinguishing clothing of the group near the Kia, the officers' vantage point, potential obstacles in their vision, the structures within the parking garage, the timing of what they saw, whom they saw with what, that was all covered extensively on both direct and cross-examination and redirect and recross multiple different times. Other than arguing what the issue, how it could have been fleshed out more, or what Jones could have been asked if, specifically if Mr. Jones had held the rifle, Mr. Sidney doesn't suggest, what other questions could have been asked of those witnesses that would have necessarily changed the outcome.
So what does that go to? Lack of specificity? Is that what you're suggesting?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, if you're going to say, more questions could have been asked, more examination could have been produced, it'd be helpful to, what
exactly. That's a tricky one. Or does that go to prejudice, which he doesn't have to allege?
Essentially, that's what the state is arguing. Is not that he hasn't shown prejudice here, but he cannot show prejudice necessarily overall, given the tenor and the content of the examination of the witnesses throughout the trial and what else could remain to be out there necessarily. As for the alleged failure to request independent DNA evidence swab testing, as provided in the state's brief, the record does not address whether or not counsel for Sidney actually requests this, whether or not any testing took place. We do know that the swabs were taken by the police department. We don't know if there was any testing done on their side. Thus, the record's probably insufficient to address that issue. Any alleged failure to secure a fingerprint expert for prints that could have been taken from the rifle. Again, the state believes that Mr. Sidney likely cannot establish prejudice here.
Well, isn't his argument there? I mean, can we say he can't establish prejudice? Because we don't know what another expert would have maybe found. I mean, isn't his argument, we should have had our own expert to take a look to, either validate or contradict what the state's expert was?
I suppose, but again, you have a fingerprint expert, a law enforcement fingerprint expert that is supplied by the state, who is then subject to a cross-examination, a potential recross, further examination on any of those issues. If there are issues that, about just basic facts and things like that, I think that could have been accomplished and were attempted to be accomplished, during the initial testimony. I guess I'm just not 100% sure based on, sort of the argument that's presented and what potential argument maybe remains about what more, I mean, other than just having a cumulative expert come in and say, yes, there were no fingerprints, there were no legible fingerprints able to be taken from this rifle, and these are the reasons that we can't pull legible fingerprints from this rifle, or maybe subsequent to the taking of that rifle into evidence, here's the reasons that, subsequent handling during an examination could, et cetera, et cetera. I guess I'm just not entirely sure what could be produced on top of what was established during direct and cross-examination.
I guess I read his argument more as saying, I should have had the opportunity to have another expert take a look at it and prove him wrong. Oh, yes, here is a fingerprint. Or, it would have taken sufficient rubbing in order to remove those fingerprints. I mean, something to contradict the state's expert's testimony.
Yes, and to be clear, I think my initial argument is that the record is probably not sufficient to address this in total, but just arguing in the alternative and based on what is contained within the record, I don't think it's unreasonable to make a conclusion that there's maybe not a whole lot of other places to take that one in combination with all the, and necessarily is it necessary to show, based on eyewitness, evidence and several other things.
Same thing with the DNA evidence.
Sure, right? Yes, sir. As far as the alleged failure to object to the state's motion in limine regarding the Giglio material, Mr. Sidney does not provide necessarily a roadmap that such an objection to that motion would have been successful. And then also, I would just point out that there was no strict prohibition on the defense from ever attempting to impeach the state's witness using the Giglio material, only one that required explicit permission from the district court prior to a specific use. And as far as I know, from my recollection of the record, Mr. Sidney's trial counsel did not attempt that at all, did not attempt that impeachment, did not request permission from the court to bring that Giglio evidence into the fore. He is not assigned as an ineffective assistance of counsel claim that his trial counsel was ineffective for not doing that. It's just he didn't object to it during the motion in limine. So I think that's a distinction that is worth making. As far as the sentence, the state would just rely on its brief unless there's specific questions.
Anything else?
Overall,
no.
The
no.
State's okay. Minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. How much time does Mr. Kosmicki have left?
Well, let me pick up right where he left off. The motion in limine, I'd refer the court to
page 60 of the transcript, the motion for limine, the language of it, as it was granted by the district court, he was prohibited or ordered from mentioning in voir dire, opening statement, closing argument, adducing any evidence or commenting in any way regarding the following and the Giglio information. And it does say by separate order of the court. But in effect, I can tell you in trial, when you get a motion limine like that, pre-trial conferences, which is usually like a week before trial, trial counsel takes says, I can't do this. I mean, it's a motion in limine. So as far as asking for a court, can I get a special permission for that? I don't know that that is practical. What I'm saying is that any trial counsel, I would have objected and saying that violates his right, the Sixth Amendment right to confrontation. I understand the sensitivity and the issues and the reasoning behind Giglio decision, but Mr. Sidney's right to confront regarding bias, prejudice, ulterior motive is paramount and protected by the Sixth Amendment, and any trial attorney or defense attorney would have recognized that and objected at the outset.
Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Counsel is excused.